There's no place to escape to.
This is the last
podcast on the left.
That's when the cannibalism started.
What was that?
You're right, though. The room does have a pickle smell that you can smell from the bodies of the round table.
There's a pickle smell. It showed up after Sunday, after everyone left. It was much stronger then.
Why is that?
I don't know.
Is it just
Eddie's
butt
pickled.
Grease?
Holding an Eddie.
I think it's just brine. We've all got a lot of brine in our bodies.
I'll blame Jackie.
No, Jackie smells sweet. I would say that it's probably Holden because his body sweat. At some point, something's got to happen. The poison's got to come out of him.
I don't know. We're recording?
Uh-huh.
Welcome to the show, everyone. That's Marcus Parks. I'm Ben Kissel. We're grumpy. Who are you?
My name is...
just be Henry.
I'm Henry Zabrowski.
Okay, thank
you. It's just good to be back in the studio.
I'm
in New York for approximately 36 hours.
That's great. Has New York driven you mad?
No. It's just you have to... I'm leaving town for 4 months, as you know. A show that I did a pilot for called A to Z on Thursday nights at NBC is now going to be filming in Los Angeles.
Yes.
So if you're in Los Angeles, please... try not to be too weird. If you're cute, you know, and nice, funny, talk to me. You know, come.
You're telling your fans how to be, and then if they live up to your standard,
then they can
approach you.
Yes, they come help me move around. I don't have a place to stay. I'm living in my car. It's going to be an interesting time.
Seems like you kind of flipped it there. you seem to be the one in need.
I need help.
Yeah. But of course, if you are in the Los Angeles area, make sure to swing by and say Hail Satan to Mr. Henry Zabrowski. Make him feel right at home.
Please. Today we're doing a very special...
today's subject, by the way.
Yeah, absolutely. What a fucking nerd. It is the next line of our in our Big Hitter series.
That's right. Before there was Chris Hardwick making nerds cool and badass, there was a man. He went by the nickname Unabomber and his birth name...
Johnny Boy Kaczynski.
Ted Johnny Boy Kaczynski. That's who we're talking about today, and the subject could not be more fascinating.
I have never heard about a person in which the term smells like old milk is used as often as about Ted Kaczynski.
Yeah.
I would say, of all of the big hitters, he's the smelliest.
Well, he's the most isolated, that's for certain.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
but he wasn't even that isolated.
No, he wasn't that isolated.
You could hear
traffic from his front door.
An ice cream truck.
What does that mean?
An ice cream truck serviced his house.
Sure.
He was on a newspaper route. If you're on a route of any sort...
Yeah.
You're not an isolated cat.
Isolation is a frame of mind.
Yeah, well, it was for him anyway.
Yes. I don't think that he felt as if he was relating to humanity on a daily basis.
But I will say, we'll go... So this is just part one of this episode. We're going to really go up to the christening of the Unabomber.
Yeah.
But, so there are many points in which I agree sort of with Ted Kaczynski.
Mm-hmm. Tread lightly. Terrorist Henry Zabrowski.
Hey, I'm with Henry on this one, man. You're outvoted two to one.
You know what? I am just fine with that.
Well, you got all these kids. Listen, kids these days, they've got their Bebop and iPhones and their Angry Birds, and everybody's out there just, you know, they're reading their electric newspapers, and they're losing sight of what's important, which is shitting in a bucket and not washing yourself in a cabin. Been in Montana.
That is important.
It is important.
Well, for those of you who don't know, Ted Kaczynski was a male bomber that operated between 1978 and 1995. He killed 3 people and injured 23 others in 16 separate incidents.
And inspired jealousy in mailmen all over the country.
He took my idea. God, Kaczynski.
I was going to do mine in the shape of a big middle finger, and they call me the fuck you murderer.
Yeah. 78 to 95. What a run!
95. I mean, one of the longest runs. And if it wasn't for the person who eventually turned him in, I don't think he would have ever gotten caught. If he
sold
hadn't,
out by
he
his damn brother,
greedy. He was sold out by his brother, and his brother eventually turned him in. But I think if his brother hadn't ratted him out, I think the Unabomber would be another Zodiac.
Yes.
We never would have known who this guy was.
No, because he probably would have tripped and fell trying to empty his dookie bucket out on the swamp over there and then fall face first into a thing and then, you know, be dead. And then they would just find a skeleton out there.
How'd Ted die? Now, he had a piece of dookie latched right up his nostril.
Right up his nostril. Yeah. It gave him head fever.
Yeah.
Oh, he died of head fever. Boiled his fucking brains in his sleep.
Yeah.
He was a good guy, except he killed all the stages.
Excuse, what was that last part?
He's a good guy.
Okay.
He used to come every round every once in a while, buy pipes and nails. Good guy.
Good guy. That Ted Kaczynski, he must have a real mansion up there in the woods, all the nails that he's buying.
Nails and pipes. He's some kind of creative plumber. I don't know. Yeah. I got to tell you one thing. He's a good guy.
So do we want to get into the backstory of Mr.
Kaczynski? Yeah, let's get
into
the backstory of him. He was born in 1942 in Illinois, which is, you know,
this was a fairly good time to be born.
Yeah, it was actually pretty great. You know, he
just
went to
miss out on Vietnam in the 70s, you know.
Absolutely. Yeah. Polish man.
Oh.
And nothing is better than a good, strong Polish man.
Yeah.
Give it up for the Kaczynskis out there that aren't bombers.
I don't know if he was trying to be a bomber. I think he was just trying to deliver steel pies to people, and he didn't know how things worked.
He must have got the Polish recipe for steel pie.
Yeah.
Well, like a lot of serial killers, the man was very isolated. In fact, he had a childhood illness, like a lot of these guys do, at 9 months of age.
So that's why every time I watch those leukemia videos with all the kids suffering, future serial killers. Don't save them. Don't save them.
Because a lot of times those kids don't even make it past 9.
Oh.
I was watching an interview with Ted Kaczynski's mother, and she was just like, he was just the cutest there, baby. Yeah, just rocking and cajoling and chortling and a chuckling. I should have got it. Literally, is what she said. And he's a chortling and a chuckling, flirty little baby, and he used to wrap his arms around my breast. And then he got hives.
Yeah.
Oh, and then he stopped chortling and chuckling.
And they had no idea where the hives came from.
And so, and according to the mother, she was just like, and there Ted was sitting in the emergency room, all covered in hives. And he was looking for
his mother from.
I don't know.
I don't either. I
from
can't.
Poland.
Okay.
And he's in there, and he's reaching for his mother, and I couldn't be there to cajole and to chortle and to comfort and to calm him. And then the baby I got back was a sober baby.
A different child.
That's what she said. It came back a totally different baby.
Well, this makes a lot of sense in his later life, because that period of time in a baby's life is extremely important as far as forming connections with other people, forming connections with your mother.
Whatever. I used to be leaving a bus stop for days. You know, and I entertained myself. That was back in the day, and it took I had to take...
Don't even pretend. You were getting stuffed like a turducken on a date. Henry Thomas, come over here. Time for your hourly feeding.
I don't like broccoli. I only like hot dogs.
For the 370th straight day, no broccoli, Henry Thomas. Who loves their mommy? Who loves their mommy?
I only love hot dogs. You bring broccoli to the table one more time. This is fire to the house.
Honey, I think we've created a monster.
Well, at fifth grade, Ted Kaczynski was tested, had an IQ test. It was found that he had an IQ of 167. Of course, was able to skip a grade. As a kid, he, for some reason, fearing people, I can get.
Totally.
But he also had an intense fear of buildings.
I mean,
makes sense that he went on to destroy many of them.
He didn't really destroy buildings.
No. If you think of a mailbox like a mini building for like a mouse family, maybe that's what he would
think. That is strange. Yeah. That is a strange thought.
Yeah. Yeah.
You're becoming like a Lilliput. You're becoming like a Gulliver with his travels.
Yeah, good.
the fear of buildings, it just seems like he was a skittish, weird kid, and his mom said that he would go to his shutdown place.
Yeah.
That any time he dealt with anything that made him scared, he'd go to his shutdown place, which was him just literally sitting and staring alone in a corner. And and you wonder why he had problems with the girls.
Right.
Yeah, but you would just sit and not talk to anybody for hours.
Yeah.
But I mean, this makes sense, and it's very common with people with elevated intelligence, especially in Illinois and the Midwest in general. Everyone's just talking about the Bears or the Packers or random meats, and he wants to discuss intellectual things.
But you discover all the time. You see that all the time. A kid who's really smart oftentimes will get in a lot of trouble as a kid because they're getting really bored. And then, like, he's probably bored with everything around him. And what, according to David Kaczynski, what he was saying, his mom treated him with a certain amount of, like, preciousness. us. Yeah. Of just being like, speak like an elevated human being. Like.
Do we have an indigo situation?
Yeah, use a better accent than the other
indigo,
kids.
Is this an indigo situation? Do we have an indigo child?
It very might be. I mean, but Kaczynski also said himself that his mom verbally abused him. Quite a bit. Didn't have any physical abuse, but he was also, he could be a Gindigo kid because he was a mite bit sensitive.
He's a bit of a bitch. Every time
I assume so.
Everything that he does, you'll see all these episodes come out of him like pouting because, oh, I'm just smarter than everybody.
Yeah. Yes.
And it's just like, guess what? Yeah, well, the rest of this country is built on the calluses of construction workers.
That's right.
And the hard knees of the pioneers that came to this country.
And ain't nothing dumb about them.
They did the hard worker killing millions of people that lived here before them.
That's right. So when you're sitting there shaking in your room, humming at a low tune, you got some people to thank.
Yeah.
And that's one of the great ironies of Ted Kaczynski. One of the great ironies of Ted Kaczynski is that this is a man that, you know, talked about how technology was ruining society, how the industrialization was ruining society. But this is the exact type of guy that would have benefited from technology.
Absolutely.
Like he's the guy that is able to survive in this world. If the technology that we have today existed back then, he wouldn't have been in a cabin shitting in a bucket. He would have got on the internet when he was 14 and maybe would have found some weird friends. Probably would have gone on 4chan a lot.
He might have been
in the cabin, though, but he would have been the president or the mayor of Foursquare for that cabin.
And except now, everybody who's a hipster would fucking love to live in a cabin shitting in a bucket because they all live like the old, dress like Amish people. Everybody's making their own pickles and their own butter. It's like Unabomber inspired a generation of people to DIY themselves and to smell them like a bunch of cattle in a hot elevator.
Maybe he tried to make the Kaczynski pickles, but nobody enjoyed the urine that he was soaking all the cucumbers in.
They hate my pickles. I will have my revenge.
Yes, this whole thing was about a failed Kaczynski pickle business. Everybody knows it.
Another odd thing about him, not much for extracurricular activities except for trombone lessons.
And that's the other problem.
This is his mother. Did his mother dress him in lederhosen as well?
But he was also in the math club. And math club is built, like, I was in the chess club at the time in high school. But, you know, it was me, two Indian kids, like a guy with, you know, headgear, braces, and a fat girl. And we had a great time.
Yeah.
And I could have finger choked that fat girl anytime I wanted back in the day.
Yeah,
but that's how you made. But that's how you make friends.
Right.
You go to like-minded people.
But you don't think that he was connecting to people in the math club?
No, he would cut classes. He would go back to his house. He'd write in his journal all day.
Right.
He'd become obsessed with mathematics. And at the age of 15, he graduated high school. And at the age of 16...
Because they say it skipped him ahead so far.
Yeah.
Which is also, again, it's not a good thing to do for your kids.
I don't think that's good at all.
Yeah.
No, because all you're doing is elevating their sense of importance. Basically,
well, you're doing that, but also he's emotionally, he should not. I mean, what? So theoretically, you go to college at 16?
He went to college. He got accepted into Harvard at 16, and he went to Harvard at 17.
So, I mean, he could be the coolest guy in the world if John Hughes wrote his life script,
but
John Hughes did not.
If he was Doogie Howser,
right.
It would have been awesome. You know what I mean? Yeah, he would have
gone instead,
zipped
girls,
up around, had his first kiss with a 21-year-old. It would have been awesome.
Yeah, but instead, like, a girl unzipped his zipper, saw his pubeless penis and balls, and laughed him out of the goddamn university.
And he's like, I'll have my revenge!
There's a lot of revenge!
Ted Kaczynski has probably said this phrase, I will have my revenge, 2 to 3 times a day. And it was always just like, you know, he drops his coffee at the gas station. It's like, I will have my revenge!
Well, I can just get you another cup of coffee, Mr. Kaczynski.
I will have my revenge!
How about another cup of coffee?
Well, instead of a girl pulling down his pants and finding that he has no pubes. Instead, he ran into what you could consider to be a very evil man, a man named Henry Murray.
Now, this is all true.
This is all 100%
true. Which is very interesting, because also when you hear about this time period in his life, when he was at Harvard, they said that he was a very, like, I think could connect to what we're about to talk about. Mm. That he was a very, again, very maladjusted, had a hard time making friends. They said that his...
Well, he's 17. What are you doing this weekend, Ted? I mean, you can't go to the kegger.
Oh, absolutely. He's not doing anything. But they said his room, again, smelled like sour milk. That's the first mention of sour milk we're going to get from Ted Kaczynski. And he had a hard time, and he was very misplaced. They said he had the dirtiest room of anybody that they knew. And that his doctorate thesis, because he was in a type of math, which is this also called pure mathematics.
Yeah.
And his favorite book of all time was called Romping Through Mathematics.
Romping Through.
Yeah, and pure mathematics means they don't even like add There's or subtract no anything. It's just them just being like, numbers are colors, and here is the algebra.
Right. It's theorems and logic and all of the
the
Goodwill,
little fun
Goodwill that, Hunting shit.
The stuff that makes you hard to talk to at a party.
Yes. Yes.
Well, he runs into this guy, Henry Murray, not at the mathematics department, but in the psychology department. This guy, Henry Murray, he was a huge figure in the intelligence agency. His specialties were personality analysis, brainwashing, and interrogation techniques.
Which makes you great at a party.
Yeah, that's
opposite
the thing.
Set of skills. Like, almost too good at a party.
Right.
Like, all of a sudden, people are making you drinks, and then they're you're getting their shoes. You're trading clothes.
Make Dave piss himself again. Like, do the thing that you do to make him piss himself.
I will do it, and then I will make him join the army.
So this guy in World War II, he was part. He was a big part of the OSS intelligence agency.
Motherfuckers, him and Preston Bush all blowing each other while Grace are making fucking. How many arrangements? How many of our fat people we're sacrificing to the Grays?
Fat people are getting sacrificed now.
Absolutely, they love the they love the fat people.
All right, we'll have to discuss that later.
Well, the OSS was the predecessor to the CIA, so he was one of the guys that originally created the evil monster that became the CIA. He was most interested in seeing how much recruits could withstand interrogation, and he designed programs to break down personalities.
Well, so what I have here is a special device that I like to call the penis sword. And what it is it's, let's call it a tiny sword. And what you do with it is, imagine the penis has a wreath for such a tiny sword.
Yeah.
And you just kind of shoot it in and out of there until he screams and tells you everything.
That's genius. Brilliant. That's the thing. I mean, these people are just sadists, but they're trying to, like, rationalize what they...
Well, you know, I think Ted Kaczynski's a sadist and been trying to rationalize
That's
everything.
The whole idea, is that everybody's right. From any perspective,
it's
you're
not
right.
It's that difficult to get people to feel a lot of pain.
Yeah.
No, all you gotta do is smash their knees with a hammer.
Yeah, that's
it. Cut their nostrils with a pair of wire cutters.
Literally thousands of ways.
Put a bunch of pepper on their feet.
Ooh, I kind
of
like that one. And then I'll lick their feet. Burrito feet.
Well, the penis sword probably isn't that far off, because this guy was an advisor during the Department of Defense LSD experiments with Timothy Leary. Like, this is what...
Because
like,
this was back in the day when Timothy... Like, you could have a job. Like Timothy Leary was a true professor.
Yeah.
And
he
before he was a counterculture hero, they were seriously studying LSD, which we probably... could use nowadays. I feel like they're trying to make a movement back towards it in psychiatry, of using psychotropic substances to kind of mine the brain for it. Because I'll tell you, mushrooms made me a cooler guy.
I took mushrooms, it changed my entire life.
Perspective.
Yeah.
Well, kids
like
out
it did
there,
the Ted Kaczynski.
Yeah. You don't have to take mushrooms to be cool, though. You just have to get out of the math club. Get out. Don't be like Henry Zebrowski or Ted Kaczynski.
Here's what Timothy Leary said about this Henry Murray guy. He said that Murray was the wizard of personality assessment, who, as OSS chief psychologist, has monitored military experiments on brainwashing and sodium amytal interrogation. Murray expressed great interest in our drug research project and offered his support. Now, Murray, at the time that Ted Kaczynski ran into this guy, Ted Kaczynski was 17. He was lonely. He was away from home for the first time. Reeked of spoiled milk.
And Murray's about 40 years old.
66.
66.
Murray is 66 and taking a lot of acid.
And this is the thing. If you're the head of the, if you're one of the senior chief members of the OSS, you got a head full of fucking acid 24/7. Right. You're getting really creative.
Oh, very creative, very strange. Yeah, maybe he didn't even think that he smelled like spoiled milk. He just felt like he smelled like a fragrance that
Mr. Kaczynski, I hate to say it, but you're the sweetest smelling boy I've ever met.
No, that's so crazy. I usually get told I smell like spoiled milk and my room's all messy.
Absurd. You must join the CIA.
So Ted came upon this guy, Henry Murray, through a psychological experiment that Murray told all the people involved in this experiment. They told, you know, listen, all we're going to do is you're going to write an essay telling, like, all of your, like, most personal beliefs, the things that you believe about most strongly in this world, and we're going to put you in a room with another student, and you guys are going to debate. You know, there you're just going to have a friendly conversation. So what Murray did instead is he had all these students write essays, you know, just, I mean, I'm talking like the what was at the core of them. Right. And then he gave the essays to defense lawyers and then would have the defense lawyers go into the room and just break these people down. Like, absolutely just, I mean, attack them psychologically and verbally and just destroy their entire ego.
While they're tripping balls on acid.
No, they weren't on acid.
Oh, I thought they were on acid.
No.
Can you imagine having a defense lawyer pick your brain apart while you're on acid? And you're
I think you might be able to win. If you're on acid and you're in the right mental headspace, I think you could beat a lawyer.
No, Murray was the only one on acid in this experiment.
I like him just sitting there just beaming out of his head. He's like, those lizards are doing very well in there. And it's like, they're lawyers, sir. Yes, I said that. Lizards.
Yeah. And I mean, there was, the environment was pretty messed up, too. They took them into this room. They connected them to electrodes. Right. They faced them against all these bright lights in a one-way mirror, so they were forced to look at their reflection. And not only that, but they also videotaped them and then made the subjects watch the videotapes of their own psychological breakdown.
I love the term of their impotent rage. It made them watch their own faces showing signs of impotent rage, which is just like, I mean, I do that a lot in sketch comedy.
Yeah.
You know, and it's funny to watch in sketch comedy, but you imagine you're like, you're real, just having to watch like a home video of you just going like,
I don't know why, but I'm rock hard. That is, it's very difficult to watch yourself in the first place, and then to watch yourself in your most emotional breakdown in that mental headspace. That had to be pretty difficult.
Yeah. He was already emotional and unstable when he got
there. But I like the browbeating of these Harvard kids. Nowadays, the Harvard kids are treated like, you know, future gods of America.
Well, they all have, like, weird, like, Pan-Asian names, and they're all, like, they got dreadlocks, and they all want to be, like, lawyers for dogs. It's a different place now.
But I do like the lawyers for dogs.
I'm a dog lawyer.
Yeah.
Like about this experiment. I mean, right. It also comes up. My grandfather
right.
was trapped in a tunnel in Italy for 2 weeks. And he came out and he was sweet as it can be. Right. I mean, he had a secret family and he lied to my grandmother. But at the same time, that's normal. That was normal. Yeah. But he was like...
So what happened? He just like fell. He just like fell down a hole?
No, they were on a secret mission. They were going to kill Mussolini.
They sent the fattest of the troops.
He was a good soldier.
Killed Mussolini, and then he got stuck in a tunnel. I'm not picturing them like stuck because they couldn't, like, they see the end.
But
grandfather's just stuffed in there.
I wish we had butter to release him from that hole, but he's consumed all the butter.
Yeah.
No, that's
dang.
So I know you're asking. We're talking about CIA. We're talking about LSD. We're talking about mind control techniques. The question on your mind right now, how does this tie into MK Ultra?
Right? I mean, the question on my lips is how does it, it's not where does it?
Well, it is MK Ultra, right? This is the early phases of it.
Yeah, I mean, well, this was going on at the same time as MK Ultra.
Okay.
And there is not any evidence that directly links it to MK Ultra, but Murray was involved in MK Ultra, and between 1960 and 1966, the CIA funneled $456,000 to 13 Harvard programs and unnamed professors in the departments of psychology, philosophy, and social relations.
You mean to tell me they didn't get any of that cash? They got some of that cash.
Of course they did.
That was the whole idea. Even when we were originally researching MKUltra, most of these people didn't even know they were part of the program. It was a bunch of people all operating for different shadow organizations that all were just funneling money through their universities so they could learn proper interrogation techniques.
So Kaczynski was... I mean, I guess by definition, he was a subject.
I mean, I'd say like, you know, like peripherally, he wasn't in the actual program, but you know, the same people that were working on
difference?
Are the same people that are working on MK Ultra and Project Artichoke and things like
that. Like being
Project
on,
Artichoke.
This is like being on Mad TV instead of being on Saturday Night Live.
You're still on TV.
Yeah. You know what I mean? Like
still on TV, you're still doing sketch comedy,
but you don't get the premium brand name.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
So, you know, here's what's extremely ironic about this entire thing is the same techniques, these therapeutic techniques that Murray developed during this time, later on in the 70s and 80s, those exact same techniques were used to try to cure serial killers and other types of psychopaths.
I thought you were going to say create terrible rock and roll music. I think that also. So why? How would they kill serial killers and psychopaths?
Because you would use the defense attorneys to break down their
Not the drug use so much, but just the strategy, just mental breakdown.
Yeah, because in Kaczynski's experiment, again, right. there was no LSD involved. It was drugs, yeah. Yeah, and they used these things.
And he
they
was still 17 years old at this time?
He was 17,
It seems a little bit young to be breaking the mind. I mean, the mind's not done yet.
I had my mind pretty thoroughly shattered when I was doing mushrooms for the first time. And that was about 18, and it was awesome.
Yeah, 18, 19 when you were in college. That's all right. Yeah, slightly different situation.
Yeah, you're also traipsing around Tallahassee.
Yeah, just go dancing around. I'm a free
flowing
hair. Yeah,
you weren't looking at yourself in a mirror. Although when you did take mushrooms that one time and you just stared at Chris Farley's picture and you're just like, tell me your secrets. Yeah. That was similar.
That was different though. And that helped me.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. And that was also like 3 years ago.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, in the inmates, of course, like they call these things, or the researchers call them dyads, but the inmates call them 100-day hate-ins.
100-day hate-ins?
Hate-ins.
Yeah, because if it did that,
and also they found that this just made the inmates worse. And if inmates, hardened fucking psychopaths and serial killers, if those people couldn't stand it, how do you think it's going to affect a 17-year-old social outcast in Harvard, away from home for the first time?
I think it's going to make him love humanity.
I'd like to think it put some hair on his knuckles.
Yep.
You know what I mean? Because that's what he really needed. He needed to be whooped. Yes, he needs a good old-fashioned whooping.
I do want to know if this works for anybody. Anybody just like walked out of there, just like, I'm a new man and I'm a better person for it. That's probably a terrible experiment.
Probably like, you know, like this would be great for Ronald Reagan.
Ronald Reagan.
It made him the actor we know who he is today.
Right.
Oh, and by the way, as soon as it was found out that Ted Kaczynski was a part of these projects, Harvard immediately sealed all the records.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Immediately. They were open before that, but no one really cared all that much.
Right. And they had to erase all the graffiti he wrote, like Ted was here, you know, like that he had...
Ted for life, yeah.
So Ted, he graduated from Harvard at 20. He graduated from Harvard in 3 years.
Unbelievable.
Doing the most difficult mathematics that can possibly be done.
So this is not an exaggeration to call him a genius.
He was a complete genius.
Right. No, my God, no. One of his math professors said that was on his dissertation committee. He said that his thesis would... He said, I would guess that maybe 10 or 12 men in the entire country understood or appreciated it.
Right. And this Murray guy probably took a lot of credit for all that.
But again, at the same time, not a good attribute for meeting women or having fun at a bowling party.
It's good for meeting women with unibrows.
Oh, but I mean, at the same time, but I just feel like there is somebody for... I mean, if Gary Ridgway... Yeah. Can find love
twice,
in this
I
world.
Believe he had, didn't he?
Twice.
Have, yeah.
Like,
yeah.
He could have found some love and maybe helped him, you know?
Yeah. I don't know if they were allowing women into math classes then. Honestly, I think that probably hurt. Probably hurt the cause.
In 1967, Kaczynski moved to Berkeley to teach at the University of California, taught undergrad geometry and calculus. In 1967, he's about 23, 24.
23 years old teaching at Berkeley.
Absolutely. But they also find it's interesting, too, is that what they brought up on this documentary I was watching, is that at the time, Berkeley was this hotbed of political activity.
Oh,
and the
same
thing that was going on at Harvard at the time, all the civil rights movements and stuff. And so there's a part of, like, when his brother was looking back on Ted's life, he was saying, like, I don't really understand where his sort of like social engagement came from, because at Berkeley he couldn't give a shit. He wasn't protesting, he wasn't political at all.
Right.
He was just concerned with math, and that's the only thing he was concerned with. And it's very strange that he would turn this whole thing into a political agenda.
Yeah,
where it almost seems like he had to validate it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, Marcus was saying, I think he just had to find a reason to kill a bunch of people, and that one fits.
And that experiment taught him is that you gotta have a gimmick.
Gotta do it. And what a gimmick he had. That must have been a bizarre feeling if you were taught by Kaczynski and then you find out he's the Unabomber.
Bad
professor.
Yeah, no.
He must have been such a Nazi. Very difficult to get an A in that class.
You see, I really had hoped he'd become sort of like a Robin Williams, like Dead Poets Society, but about math, you know?
We're going to go learn outside today.
This is how you make an undetectable mail bomb. What you do is first you erect this shelter for yourself and get yourself a poo bucket. You want it to be 18 inches from the ground so you don't get any shit on your ankles.
Hey, Big Pam, I'll meet you by the trees after class. Hey, I'm going to neck you. I'm going to suck your tits.
Yeah. Let's skip next week.
So after 2 years of doing this, after many bad reviews from students,
because they said that like they would ask questions and he would just ignore them. He would just sit at the board and just write stuff all day and recite stuff from the thing, which is
stuttering,
you know,
mumbling.
Yeah,
I mean, really,
no humor.
No, I would like to hear him tell a joke. And I'm sure that he laughed a couple of times.
They said that,
but it must have been
everyone said that his brother said he was the most remarkably serious person he's ever met in his life.
Yeah.
Real pain in the ass.
Right.
So 1969, age 26, he resigns from Berkeley completely, gives no real explanation. And some people, there are differing theories on what happened here. Some people say that he had, you know, a crack up. He just broke down.
Yeah, that's
down.
What I'm thinking. I think he went to the chancellor. He's like, so it turns out, I'm crazy. I'm crazy. I gotta go.
He's like throwing Cheetos in his face and taking his pants off. But that's a good crack up.
That's a real good crack up.
It's just
others,
to see him have a little personality for once, you know?
You know, others say that he had just been kind of biding his time and saving up a little bit of money so he could finally get his cabin in the woods.
All he wanted was this damn cabin in the woods. Yeah. He had all of the accoutrements of a good professor, though. I'm sure he dressed terribly. He had an awful beard. He smelled like spoiled milk, as we said. And he was a total slop. That's every professor in a nutshell.
I don't know, but sometimes you'll get like a hot one. Like he's like 23 years old. He's got glasses. Maybe he's a little he's a little awkward. He's kind of Dr. Who-y.
Right.
And everyone's just like, ooh, who's that? I want to suck on his pube stick.
Right.
You know, and then
I don't teach
out,
a typical class because I don't think you guys are typical people.
So he goes out and he goes to Montana. He builds a cabin in the woods. No electricity.
He built it himself.
I mean, it was like 10 foot by 12 foot.
Right.
I mean, it was smaller than the room that we're sitting in right now.
And also from his like first bombs too, I don't think it was well made.
It was not well
made.
When
your life is pure mathematics, you're not going to turn into a Paul Bunyan over night.
Right. I mean, we live in a world of peanut allergies and weed allergies and autism.
Yeah.
He was extremely autistic, wouldn't you say?
I would say he had to have been autistic. I mean, later on, he was diagnosed as paranoid schizophrenic.
There's also a difference between being autistic and just being like a real jerk.
Yeah.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? He was
true.
Kind of just a jerk.
Well, I don't know. Asperger's at the very least.
And if you go around putting bombs in a bunch of mailboxes, I mean, I'd be paranoid too.
No, it makes you a real jerk.
Because you probably think that other people are doing it.
Yeah,
you're just like, well, I'm just one of the guys putting bombs in all the mailboxes.
No, he thought
I'm
he
sure
was
there's
the
hundreds
only
of others.
He thought he was the only one. He thought he was a real Michael Jordan of mail bombs out there. But it turns out he was just a Charles Gralt.
Gralt, you
who played for the Indiana Hoosiers.
Please, a Paxton at the very least.
John Paxton. Wow, some references being thrown around today.
I don't know if I made a real name up. I don't know if that is Charles Gralt.
I refuse to look it up.
Yeah, don't bother. Sounds like a terrible explorer.
Yeah, so this cabin, was this the cabin?
This was the cabin.
Okay,
yeah.
So he lived there for 35 years?
Easily, yeah. From 69 to 95, he lived in this same weird-ass cabin. And like I said earlier, you know, like there was, the media said it was extremely isolated and that, you know, he was so far away from everyone else. You could hear traffic from his door.
You
could catch the bus. You could see other houses from there.
Right, again.
So it wasn't that isolated. He was a weird guy, of course.
He was very isolated.
Yeah, but he was isolated personally.
Personally.
Yeah. As far as Montana goes, like, he was living up other people's asses. Like, this he was,
it's a real metropolis.
This is not isolated for
Montana.
He
was
Montana
in the Brooklyn of Montana.
Yeah, exactly.
He's like, I wonder what that guy's doing in the castle on the hill up there.
You know, and he retreated from society, built his own cabin, and I was reading a book, you know, I was talking about Ted Kaczynski, and they made a very good point. One could almost compare him to Thoreau at Walden Pond.
Yeah.
Except Thoreau, I imagine, also smelled like spoiled milk.
Yes, I guarantee that.
Anybody who says that they're like a naturalist, you can pretty much just assume is that that really just means I have dank ass pubic hair and armpit hair, and it all is that you can smell me coming.
Yep.
Oh, they call me Ted Smell Me Coming Kaczynski.
Yep, can't sneak up on anybody.
So Kaczynski, he worked odd jobs here and there, but he mostly lived off of his parents' money. And he's like the shittiest trust fund kid
you could
possibly imagine.
Oh, yeah.
And he used that money to, you know, fund his whole bombing campaign. But he never held a steady job.
But what led up that, too, is that he had tried to buy a tract of land in Canada. And he went to go, and like literally, like he went to go get a land, and his brother was trying to help him out. And so David and him went to go get the land. They filled a bunch of paperwork. And then I guess he comes back because they were staying together in a hotel, and Ted, I guess, had gotten the information that he didn't get it, and then he just sat there staring on one of his shutdown faces, just going like, and he wouldn't talk to him and he wouldn't respond to him, and he just let the letter drift to the ground, and he picked it up and it was the refusal letter, and he was just like, oh, Ken, you can't get your land for your cabin. And he's just like, they won't let me live there, so I'll blow up there. Hands.
Ooh, I like
it. I'll get my revenge.
Cryptic. Yeah, the man hated the mail
system. No, but he tried to do that. So then the cabin was kind of his like consolation prize.
Yeah.
Too smelly for Canada, huh? That's bizarre.
His family tried helping him out. Like, they got him a job at the foam rubber factory where his father and brother worked.
And he went on a couple of dates at the foam rubber factory.
Yes, he did. And it did not work out.
No, of course it didn't.
He went on a date with a supervisor.
He's a weird guy, but then the foam rubber factory, that's made up, right? Is that true that he works at the foam rubber factory?
It's the only factory-type place that could possibly cover the spoiled milk smell.
Right.
At least then he just smells like foam rubber, but everybody does.
I got myself a new job at the foam rubber factory. Now I'm going to go find myself a wife and have some kids. Yeah.
David literally said that. He's like, I remember the day that I saw Ted the happiest I'd ever seen him. He came home and he said, I went on an evening with my supervisor, and we shared some conversation, and we shared a kiss at the end. Can you imagine smelling his mustache, first of all?
Just like,
and so, but then that didn't last too long because she said that they didn't have enough in common.
They had nothing in common because she didn't want to blow up humans.
But then he started hounding her pretty bad.
And he got fired because of it.
He didn't enjoy rejection.
No, he did not. And this is when he decides that he's going to have to live off of the land.
Oh, yeah. He's a pussy. Yeah. He's a pussy baby. Yeah. He flipped out as soon as one girl said no. And it's just like, I can't handle rejection. Try being an actor.
Right. I mean, this guy was an asexual, though, anyway.
I can't imagine
he was that interested in women, though, at some point.
He was probably fucking a log out there. He had to have
something. He was. Yeah. One with nature.
Well, he tries to live alone. But, of course, as he's trying to live alone, there's a lot of development going on around him. A lot of industry is moving in. Perhaps the actual cabin itself in the beginning was isolated.
Sure.
But the entire world started encroaching around him.
Oh, it's like that Dr. Seuss book. Dare I say Dr. Seuss novel.
Yeah.
Oh, that's what I'm
saying. The Lorax?
The Lorax.
Yeah. Oh, I thought it was Ted Kaczynski, Here's a Who.
And blows it up.
And of course, the last straw came. Of course, he's not happy in academia. He's not happy working at the foam rubber factory.
Nope.
So he decides he's going to live off of the land. He's going to be in his little cabin. He's going to do his little theorems and everything is fine. But it said that the last straw was he went to his favorite spot, this secluded spot that he would go to, you know, look at nature, muse on whatever theorem he was
working. Dead Fish Lake.
Dead Fish Lake.
All the fish were dead and floating at the top.
They didn't care about my milk smell. Mm. They were only there to listen.
Screaming at the dead fish.
Fuck you! Fuck! Mm. Fuck everybody! Fuck!
Okay, it was another nice day with the fish.
He gets to his favorite spot and he finds that it's been completely destroyed and replaced with a road.
This is literally the Lorax.
Yeah. It really is.
Looks like the Lorax.
What
too.
Came first, by the way, Ted or the Lorax? I think Seuss stole the story.
Well, this is what Kaczynski's, because we're gonna have to read some of Kaczynski's stuff.
Oh, we're gonna
especially next episode when we get to the manifesto. But this is just still from his journals.
As far as manifestos go, too, really top notch stuff.
It was kind of hard to read.
It's a little hard to read, but once you find the excerpts, you get somebody to, you know, bring the good stuff out.
Right, right.
There's some, you know, good points, but this is still when he's writing in his journals. And by the way, when they found his cabin and when they found all of his journals, he had 30,000 pages of journal entries, and about a third of that was in a mathematical code that when the FBI took it over to the CIA, they said that they had not seen anything to rival this code since the Enigma machine of the Germans in World War II.
Oh, he's a regular Judy Blume over there with his longevity.
He could have been huge.
All right, this is what he says. It was from that point on I decided that, rather than trying to acquire further wilderness skills, I would work on getting back at the system. Revenge.
Revenge.
I certainly don't claim to be an altruist or to be acting for the good, whatever that is, of the human race. I act merely from a desire for revenge.
I will have my revenge!
Of course, I would like to get revenge.
Oh, I'm sorry, it's 8:13. I've got to go to the foam rubber factory. I will be back to my diary in exactly 8 hours' time.
On the whole scientific and bureaucratic establishment, not to mention communists and others who threaten freedom, but that being impossible, I have to content myself with just a little
revenge!
He really shoehorned communism in there, by the way.
He really did. I think that's literally what it's just got to do. Communism is just like, he just met like a bunch of cute girls at a sit-in.
Right.
And they didn't want to talk to him because he smelled like milk.
So this is all because of Rode.
It's all because of Rode. And this is when he decides violence is the only way. And it takes him a little while from that happens until he finally puts some bombs out there. I mean,
I think
about 5 years or so before he finally gets up the courage to start sending shit out.
I also, and then there's the final statement too of he started planting some bombs. He's like, I emphasize that my motivation is personal revenge. I don't pretend to any kind of psychological tools by which society controls people's behavior. My ambition is to kill a scientist,
ooh,
big businessman,
ooh, a big one,
a big one. So he's always all big and he blows up like a whale. Government official or the like.
I mean,
I would also like to kill a communist.
If I'd have my druthers.
It is funny because this is, there does seem to be a lot of arrested development here.
Yeah.
This is what you write when you're 13 years old.
Oh, yeah, no, this reminds me of my 15-year-old poetry of just being like, and then it was all just like, and they hear the rattle of the drums, and I, with my Uzi, show all the jocks that I too can date Ashley.
Yeah, he's got the emotional development of Dylan Klebold.
Totally. Yeah, of course, from Columbine. That's, if you would, before Columbine, you were able to get away with some relatively strong worded poetry.
Yes, we called it
nowadays,
fantasy.
Yeah, fantasy. Nowadays, you just get put right in the loony bin.
Yeah, they give you Ritalin, and then of a sudden, all you can do is watch Teletubbies in a fucking strap-down chair.
So he's just upset because they ruined his little home.
All right, yeah, they ruined his little home, and he was just an extremely unstable individual. And
Montana sucks as it is.
Right. Hmm?
Right? Doesn't Montana suck?
No, it's beautiful for nature, and if you like to hunt, if you like the outdoors.
Yeah.
I mean, it sucks for people like us who can't survive without a Whole Foods, yes?
So he decides that reform is not possible whatsoever. And, you know, talking about his time at Berkeley and his time at Harvard, you know, he sees all these people saying, you know, we've got to reform the system. We've got to work from the inside, you know, and change everything.
Oh, yeah.
And everyone's fucking and doing drugs. And he's just sitting there doing his little mathematical theorem. And so it could be he's very jealous of those
people.
This
is all, I mean, I can sort of see, as far as society goes, that you had the Weather Underground at this time. You had a bunch of internal,
those people were fucking too.
Groups.
They were all fucking and having a cool time.
Oh, they were having a great time, But there was everyone was sort of broken off into their own, you know, extremist groups, but they were all doing it to get pussy and to get drugs and stuff and have a good time. And
the
he
other
had
thing
nobody
is,
else to go have sex with.
While he was at Harvard, they were sort of pranksters. And so what they would do is they would set up amateur explosives. So a lot of times that apparently Ted was the one who was always would take the explosives to the area where it was uncomfortable because, you know, again, bad at making friends.
Just making them large, too big.
Yeah, and he blew out all the windows of a chemistry lab. That was like a thing. So it's like he had already kind of started dabbling in bombs.
Weird science.
Again, but that movie was all about getting Bush.
Right.
Yeah, so he figures he keeps calling the techno-industrial system.
Right.
I've got to take down the techno-industrial system. And he thinks through sending mail bombs out, he's going to destabilize the system. People are going to become panicked. Right. And the entire thing is going to fall, which is all bullshit. This guy.
I see the
train of thoughts there. But I think all this guy, he wanted his revenge.
Revenge!
He wanted his revenge. He wanted to kill people, but he needed a justification for it. He's a justification. Right. He's a crusader serial killer, a missionary serial killer.
Yeah, sure. He was like, what's his name? Peter Sutcliffe.
Yeah.
Who was like, I'm going to, he kill all the whores.
Yeah. Yeah, or just pretty much any guy who kills all the whores. Like Gary Ridgway.
All of
them.
They were saving the world. They were purging the world of their sin.
Yeah, that's how Gary Ridgway thought. He's going to kill. He's very much a deep believer in the Bible, so he's going to do the same. He's going to purge the world of these people, except Ted Kaczynski was such a fucking nerd that he wanted to purge the world of scientists.
Scientists
and people involved in technology and so big businessmen.
So had he won...
He would have hated that show, Silicon Valley.
Oh, would not have loved it. Would not have loved it.
But he would have loved Bang Theory.
I just think they're so funny. They're funny, and I love their shirts.
It's just nice to see a show about people like me.
$1 million an episode, by the way,
Bazinga.
For each member, each member of that cast. $1 million an episode. So he wanted to stop the internet from happening.
Yeah.
He lost the future.
Yeah.
He lost the future.
Yeah. He didn't want... He wanted everything to come... He wanted us to go back to where he lived, which
is the only thing that he's good at.
Yeah.
I don't understand. This is the one part that confuses me about him. The only thing that he's good at is being a mathematician, having a mathematical mind. It would have worked so well with creating internet websites and all these things. Why would he want to destroy the only possible avenue for him to become a multimillionaire?
Because he didn't want to fit into any system. He was mad that Becky didn't want to date him at the foam rubber family factory. And
she went out with it. He creeped her out.
It's a problem, but still, she could have stuck it through and saw the real him, because the whole thing. If you can handle me at my worst, you don't deserve me at my best.
I think that he was giving her the best.
So how did this start?
1978.
Worst year in America.
Yeah, 1978.
Right.
You got Jimmy Carter. You got the Iran hostage crisis. You got the gas shortage.
Economy's in the shithole.
Malaise, my friends. The time of malaise. He decides that he's going to send out his first bomb. Investigators are still a little baffled about...
Who he
chose, why he chose them, the pattern in which he chose them.
I think he just went through a Yellow Pages and was like, this one.
Directories.
This guy had a ridiculous name. Buckley Christ. The first guy, materials engineering professor Buckley Christ at Northwestern University, sounds like a parody movie about Jesus's second cousin.
Right. We're looking for Mr. Christ, Jesus Christ. No, I'm just Buckley. I haven't seen Jesus in a little while. God abandoned me a long time ago.
Why did you turn that water into Kool-Aid?
Oh, man. Gosh darn it.
God darn.
Oh, my followers lost their teeth. Gosh darn it.
So Kaczynski, he uses... The reason why he wasn't caught for such a long time is that he retained his intelligence completely. He was so smart as to how well... the first one that he did, this one, it was a double bluff. It was amazing. He took this package, he put it into the parking lot at the University of Chicago, which was a completely different location from where the bomb showed up and where it said it was from. He put a return address from a Polytechnic Institute in Troy, New York, and the other one, the actual send-to address, was to Buckley Christ at Northwestern University.
But it was just in the middle of the parking lot?
In the middle of the parking lot at a university. These people, they say, professor. Oh, okay, I don't know how this got here.
Oh, dude, so someone needs to take care of this.
Someone needs to take care of this. So, they put it in the mail, and this guy gets it. The guy from the return address, he gets it, and he doesn't recognize his handwriting on it. And he's like, that's a little odd that someone would write, a return address for me. So he calls up a security guard, a college security guard, and he's like,
Yeah, why don't you take care of it?
So do you think this is a way, was this a way for Kaczynski, because we know he's not the boldest man, is this a way for him to wash his hands of it?
I don't think this is just a way for, he just knows how to not get caught.
Yeah, that's the idea. So it just kind of disappears.
So you get a bunch of fingerprints on it, like everyone's kind of touched it. And
yeah, I mean, it's just, it's gone through the mail so much. And the security guard, before he opened it up, he actually like joked, he's like, maybe it's a bomb.
Never say that.
No. Yeah, because all you're doing is setting it up. And then
say, maybe it's $1,000. Then maybe it will be. It's never good to say maybe it's a bomb.
The secret.
You'll see, you know, his further attempts to not get caught. You'll see the way that the bombs are constructed. He almost handmade
everything.
Every piece in the bomb. The switches were made out of hickory. He used matches that were untraceable. He used nails that were untraceable. He used batteries in which he scraped off all of the labeling. Right. And that's why the first bombs that he built, kind of shitty.
I like that, though.
No, they were like Etsy.
Yeah.
You know, they
now
had
this is
like
100% homemade bomb right there. Mm-hmm. Can't go wrong with it.
I mean, it didn't work because, you know, when regular pipe bombs, you want the metal threading on it because it kind of creates pressure. It creates a bubble that explodes, plus you get a lot more shrapnel. But his trademark throughout the years, wooden boxes. He would always use wood because part of his trip was also an environmental trip.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, he knew exactly how to make a wooden box, if we can look at the cabin that he has in the woods.
He would have done great at shop.
It's just a large. Yeah.
Shop
I think
class.
He would have been okay at shop.
I mean, he would not have dealt with the jocks.
No,
he would have been very good at the projects.
Yeah, that's right.
So the person who opened up was the security officer, Terry Marker, opened it up and then just blew a bunch of his fingers off, which became sort of the scarring, became really the what Unabomber became known for.
Yeah, he mutilated a lot of people. Like he only killed three, but seriously injured a lot of people.
That seems to be common. Like that Luke Helder guy from UW Stout, when I was in college there, he tried to make the smiley face across America.
Yeah.
That's all he did. He just blew off people's arms and
it's
hands
bad.
And things. Terrible.
No, because
very terrible.
Because the
yes.
idea is that the it's but it's it like, shows that his real motivation was never to he wanted to kill, but he didn't really want to kill. He wanted the ego trip of fear.
Right.
He wanted the ego trip of creating a atmosphere of fear like Son of Sam.
Yeah. And especially that's how, you know, focusing on universities, he wanted to create that atmosphere of fear within the system that he hated.
Right. He hated
so much. Here's the funny thing. His nickname was not originally the Unabomber. The U.S. Postal Service, they were the first people to have a handle on this case. They all named him the Junkyard Bomber.
Oh.
Junkyard Bomber.
Junkyard Bomber sounds like a wrestler's name.
Yeah, exactly.
The guy with a big wrench and a dog tied to a chain, and he just goes like, it's time to give him the dump truck.
Yeah, just an elbow from the top rope, the old dump truck. Yeah. Unitard.
That's what I'm going to call him.
The unitard. Little slowpoke.
And his buddies called him Winnie the Shits.
Oh, look at that.
Another bad nickname.
I like Winnie the Shits. So the first guy got some fingers blown off.
Mm-hmm.
And then how long did he wait to before he sent out the next mystery package?
Less than a year. And it was also
at
Northwestern University. And this one, it wasn't a mail bomb. This was just one that he kind of set out there. This guy, John Harris, there was this cigar-shaped box that had the Phillies, like the Phillies Blunt cigar logo on it. It had just been lying around a room in Northwestern University in one of the classrooms. And he just said, like, you know what? I can do this box like that. That's a cool little box. Let's go check out and see what that box is all about.
Never check out boxes.
No, don't do it. Don't do it.
He opened up the box, and the force of this blast was a hell of a lot bigger than the last one.
So he was getting better.
He was getting better. And I don't know if how he checked his work, because, I mean, he was in Montana. You know, it's not like he had the internet to check out and see what happened at Northwestern, what happened here, what happened there. I don't know how he knew that he was getting better at it.
I'm certain there would be a mystery bomber. I bet he got a newspaper. Again, he just caught the fucking bus and went to town. It was right there.
Because he can go to Missoula, and there's plenty of places in Missoula to get some newspapers.
And I guarantee you, at 8 a.m. every single day, there was a big dump on that road. No one knows who did it. He always did it, though.
There's some kind of mystery pooper out here on this road. I hope he doesn't turn into a bomber of some sort. Well,
Unabomber, maybe.
So in 1979, that's when Ted Kaczynski finally hits national headlines.
What happened with the guy who opened up the cigar box?
I mean, he was maimed again.
Yeah, he said minor cuts, like, and, minor cuts and, okay, and burns.
Yeah, it was the same thing as the guy before. So in 1979, he decides that he is going to bomb an American Airlines flight.
Which, things get pretty serious.
Right, right.
Once you want to bomb an airplane.
Yeah.
Yes.
But he wasn't targeting American Airlines specifically. He wasn't targeting any flight specifically. He just, and it's fairly ingenious how he did this, he just put out the parcel to airmail. And of course, in airmail, you know, a lot of these things are carried along commercial flights.
Yeah.
And he rigged up a barometer in this package, that once the barometer hit 35,500 feet,
it would blow, which would is normal trigger. Cruising altitude,
yeah,
for a plane.
Which is normal, yeah. Which it, the right. The bomb triggered, and he
and then Bane and all of his henchmen would come. And no, Matt Hardy, now can you sound like you got more toilet paper in your mouth? No more toilet paper.
I'm reworking on my Bane verse.
That's very good. That's Yeah, if a butthole could talk, that's what it was to sound like. There we go. Perfect.
He still wasn't very good at making his bombs. It was just a big mass of gunpowder. He didn't build it that well, but it did fill the entire cabin up with smoke. A lot of people got sick. There was an emergency landing. But one authority said that if he would have built it correctly, it would have obliterated the plane.
Oh, yeah.
Like, it would have just, I mean, blown into a million pieces.
It's hard out there. We're all a work in progress.
Right. So he got lucky with his second bomb.
Well, the people got lucky. Like, I mean, yeah,
the people got lucky,
yeah,
Ben.
Not him.
No, I know. I'm saying because the second bomb was better than the first, but it seems like he kind of went back to the old ways for the third, and it wasn't such a successful bomb.
Yeah. I think he was self-sabotaging. I don't think he really wanted to succeed. Because you can never, you can't, it's never can't.
He
it's
didn't do
won't.
It. Yeah. Daily affirmation and believe in yourself.
Yeah.
Of course.
Yeah. If you want revenge, believe in yourself.
Revenge.
So, of course, bombing an airliner is pretty serious. They bring in the FBI on this. They bring in the ATF. And so now you've got the FBI, you've got the ATF, you've got the Postal Inspection Service.
Yeah, you got all the fuck up societies coming in there, all ready to just like,
right,
we'll burn it down. Yeah. You're like, no, yeah, wait, let's
oh,
wait.
Oh, yeah, if I want a fucking crime solved, who am I going to turn to? Oh, the ATF and the post office. Great.
Cool.
I'm scared of the post office. They're not messing around.
So the task force eventually grew to 150 full-time investigators, analysts, and others. Over the next 17 years, 50,000 suspects would be added to the database. And as the task force was put together, this is when he gets his infamous name, the University and Airline Bomber, or Unibomb.
I did not realize that's where that was from.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he was technically known as Unibomb. He was known as Unibomb.
Wow.
And then they made the Unibomber because it was just, you know, it's, you know, the Post probably made that.
I mean, again, like they always do in the media, they give these guys such cool names.
Cooler names.
And, I mean, did they have the sketch at this point?
No.
That made him look like he was
the
sketch came in like 85.
But that's like, literally, this was the, I remember this time period because it was like up until when he was caught in 95. This was the first like serial killer that I personally was obsessed with. I had, my mom found I had a folder that had all the cutouts of the Unabomber, all the pictures, all the articles about him. Because I remember I had that picture of his mugshot, the drawing of him taped to a folder.
Mm-hmm.
And,
by the way,
that must have been frightening.
I'm just gonna say, all the parents. I don't know how
to
any
find
of
in the bottom of my closet. You know, like
I don't know if I found that in my kid's closet, I just
chip of the old block.
You know, the apple doesn't fall too far from the tree.
Yeah. Right. Well, let's keep. I'll talk to your kid. Let's do that. I do feel like the guy who created the drawing, the mugshot, he just had no idea. He was lazy. Just gave him like huge glasses, a hoodie. I mean, you couldn't be more covered up than this guy.
I mean, that's what the witness who saw him, that's how she described him to him.
Right.
Like, he was wearing a hood. He was wearing
you know what?
It was the only time he was ever seen.
Maybe he was having some, like, a carton of milk, like, in his pocket or or maybe in his satchel bag, but there was just a smell of spoiled milk.
Right. Yeah.
Now,
I mean,
are
a lot
you
of people
sure you didn't just see Levon Helm?
Hey, man, that's a little fucking over the line right there.
Sorry. I mean, I would imagine that after, you know, playing music, you get a little bit odorous.
Yes, that is
Marcus
true.
Smells fine. He plays music every week.
Yeah. Well, I play it a few times a week. I'm a drummer, just like Levon Helm.
I ain't trying to bottle the fragrance, though. I mean, it's not that. It's not spoiled milk, but it's not exactly daisies in the field.
It's somewhere between spoiled milk and brute.
Right.
Yeah. That's how it's describe your smell.
Oh, thank you. It's quite
That's
sweet.
Okay, all right. Well, let's compliment.
All right, yeah. It's a compliment.
Awesome. So so three bombs in.
Yeah,
he's the Unabomber. I guess we'll pick it up there.
Yeah, he's got the name. He's got the game. All he needs now is
a woman to love him. I don't know. A different personality entirely.
Yes, something else. Right. He needs something else. He just needs a university job. If only just man. I bet if we
fired me from that foam rubber plant, I would never be doing this.
If we could have just gotten a fleshlight and then just sent it to him and just be like, hey, anytime you're lazy, every time you're feeling like you got an afternoon to kill, plug this in the wall.
This is funny because I usually send bombs that explode, but I'm about to explode into this bomb right here.
Well, and it's nothing is quite like the fresh scent of washing your fleshlight out by a beautiful stream.
Yeah,
I know the scent of washing my fleshlight bathtub.
Oh,
in
disgusting.
It's rubbery and musky.
Very single life.
Musty. I got the tape.
Yeah, no.
It's very musty.
Put some dryer sheets in there.
You're a relatively attractive young man. You don't have to have sex with a fleshlight.
You let him have his ball plunger.
I don't have to. I don't have to do a lot of things.
The Ball Plunger 2000. Wonderful. Well, let's do a Hail Satan.
Hail Satan. I will miss New York City. I will miss you.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Of course. Henry, safe travels.
Thank you.
Let's see. Anything else going on? I guess September 7th, we have some live show here at the Creek.
September 7th.
We're going to have all the people from Cave Comedy Radio.
Well, we're moving that because September 7th is the first day of football.
Okay, so scratch that. I apologize. Yeah. Eddie does not tell me these things.
We're moving it to, this was only decided yesterday, moving it to August 31st. And in fact, we're having a bit of a weekend because we'll have the Last Podcast on the Left live show on Saturday night. And then we're going to have the Cave Comedy Radio sausage party on Sunday. So it's going to be a hell of a CCR weekend.
Can we rename Sausage Party?
Good. The Cave Comedy Radio Sausage Party. Meet all of your favorite Cave Comedy Radio personalities.
I don't like the name. I'm just going to Sausage Party. Good Lord.
Sausage Festival?
Sounds like a stinkier sausage party.
Yes, that's worse. What about...
Come out to the sausage carnival.
Hang out with the crew and brew. I don't know. It's just something better than sausage party. Either way. August 31st. It's an all-day affair.
Yeah, it's going to be great, man. It's gonna be super fucking sweet. Yeah, Last Podcast on the Left live show on the 30th and Cave Comedy Radio live on the 31st featuring the trial of the mystery pooper.
Uh-huh. Yes, and Heidi V. Kelly. I'm going to give a hi to V. Kelly and say I miss her again.
V. Kelly.
Yes.
V. Kelly. V. Kelly. Yeah.
And how was the shooting in Atlanta for season 2 of Pretty Face?
We've made the 3 best episodes we've made in the entire series.
Wonderful. Awesome.
You will great love dude. It.
Did you break out in hives this year?
No. Nope. Look at me. My skin's pretty good.
You look great.
Yeah, you got used to it. You built up a tolerance.
I am. I wash myself in 99% alcohol.
Oh, God.
I'm jealous, actually. Wow, that's perfect. All right, everybody. Hail yourselves.
Hail me!
Hail Gene.
Emma Costa Lecha.